Good afternoon, everybody. This is Patrick from the Poison Pen Bookstore, and we're here with another of our virtual events this afternoon, or this evening. And today, we have an all-star cast here. We have Michael Kurita, who edited the superb new Mystery Writers of America anthology, When a Stranger Comes to Town. And we have two of the contributors here, Lori Roy and Steve Hamilton. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
And of course, Barbara is tuning in from her home office here, and she's going to be moderating the discussion today. And I will be monitoring the Facebook comments. So those of you watching, if you have questions for Michael, Steve, or Lori, just go ahead and type them in there, and I'll reappear towards the end of the program and ask some of those tough questions. Here again is the book, beautiful volume. So Barbara, over to you.
Thank you, Patrick. Welcome, everybody. This is really a very exciting anthology. I have to admit that I'm more of a novel reader than a short story reader, but then I also realized that my attention span has been dramatically shortened by events over the last year. And so I've really loved reading these short stories. And I'd like to talk a little bit about points that Michael made in the introduction. Choosing a theme for, this is the Mystery Writers of America's anthology. And he chose a quote from Leo Tolstoy. Do you have it memorized, Michael, or do I read it?
I think it's all great literature is one of two stories, a man goes on a journey or a stranger comes to town.
That's it. Well done. And so which half of that did you elect to be the theme of this book? I mean, this is a giveaway because we already see the title, but still.
When I think about mysteries in general, the idea of a stranger arriving or being the stranger in a strange land journey is so central to a lot of my favorite books. And it seemed like the type of theme that allowed writers to actually have fun and stretch and go in different directions. I think theme anthologies can be really dangerous because you solicit your friends, you beg, you plead, and you get great people like Lori and Steve to say, okay, I'll do this. And the more penned in they are, the less happy they will be. This was my operating theory. Now, this is the first time I have ever played the editor role. Barbara, you've done this, I don't know how many times.
Over 800.
Yeah, I'm gonna hang up my hat on this one. I don't know how you do it. So I wanted to get a bunch of talented people together and give them as much rope as possible. And I think we ended up with a really unique anthology because of that. We have stories ranging from the hyper-contemporary to some of the supernatural tint. Just the voice range in it is really exciting. And they didn't seem quite as mad at me because I tried to remove any escape chute, any exit ramp where Lori could come back and say, well, I don't consider myself a forensics writer, so I'm not going to contribute to this. So by making it as broad as possible, I think I got them a little bit more with their back against the wall.
Well, you yourself wrote a story in it, which we'll come back to, but let me talk to Steve, because Steve and I have been together since his very first book.
That's right. In fact,
his most recent book, Bounty, published with Janet Ivanovich, is the first book he's ever written that he has not appeared at the Poison Pen to discuss. Thanks to the pandemic and so forth. But Steve, I was really interested in this story because you've written it with a woman as the lead,
right.
And you've also wandered into the medical community. So this is a lot different. What inspired you to do that?
Well, you know, when Michael asked us, first started talking to us about this, it got to be, it's like 2 years ago, Mike. I mean, it was a long time.
At least, yeah. Because I was able to, I really baited you guys in. I said there was no deadline.
Right. But of course, everything has a deadline eventually. But I was so proud of myself because I was actually ahead of it this time, I thought. And I thought there was this idea kicking around in my head about an emergency room nurse who goes on this, sort of is compelled to go on this kind of this revenge mission. And it was a lot different than anything I'd ever done before, but it was just something that I wanted to try doing. And I had this story pretty much done a long time ago, but then as the pandemic hit, And as we get closer to when you finally needed that story, I realized I couldn't give it to you because it was about an emergency room nurse in New York City. And this was like last year, like last fall, I think.
I think our drop dead deadline was April 1st. I mean, we were all,
emails
going back and forth with everyone. This book will stand out in my mind for that reason. It was, you know, early weeks of lockdown, New York City was terrifying. And the collection kind of gave me an excuse to be in touch with a lot of my friends. So I appreciated that.
Well, good. But I mean, but for my own part, I had a story pretty much done about an emergency room nurse in New York City early last year. And I realized I couldn't give it to you because it would be so tone deaf and so oblivious and so so out of the moment. It's like I had to go back and really sort of start over because, or at least if not start over, at least sort of accommodate the fact that this huge sort of tsunami was coming. And that's what sort of took over everybody's lives, especially if you were working in a hospital in New York City last year. So, but it kind of worked out because if you think about it, last year, what was the ultimate stranger come to town?
Exactly. It's the virus.
It was that. So it kind of, I turned it around pretty quickly having to redo it, but I was glad I did.
I really enjoyed it. It was, you know, it's fun to read a writer where you think you know them and then they're coming out to do something else. This was the basic premise of Laurie King and Leslie Klinger's Sherlock Holmes anthologies. You know, they ask people to write Sherlock Holmes stories that are contemporary or whatever, people who are not Sherlockians at all. And they got really, I think they've done 5 volumes now, I think, based on this premise. And it's really been fun for the contributors to do something, you know, completely unexpected. Sure. And fun for readers. So Laurie, I don't know your work as well as I know Steve, but tell us about your story and what inspired you to write it.
Well, I was thinking back to how long ago we started this, and it was a couple years ago, and we had just moved into a new house at that time. We moved into a neighborhood of largely like 1920s craftsmen. People really buy these homes because they love the original features, the stripped pine floors and the original glass doorknobs. So when Michael reached out about the story, I was knee deep in paint and knocking down lap siding. And I say that whereas my husband's doing most of it and I take a photo op occasionally.
You were doing some real demo work, as I recall.
Well, I do my fair share, I suppose. I do a lot of directing, like color choices. But I was really knee deep and just loving the history of this house. And my office is part of the original part of the house. And so I dove into this story. And it's the first time I really wrote something where I could say my own front porch was the setting.
Yeah.
That the people that live in the house have nothing to do with my real life, but I wrote it very close to home. And, you know, as with a lot of authors, and I find with all my work, I start with the character. And I just started with this character, Harmon Bales, who was a young man in a pretty young marriage who desperately needed to be needed by his wife. And his wife was desperate to be wanted. And these two sort of needs or philosophies in life butt up against each other when they look outside and they see police sirens outside what was the wife's childhood home. And then trouble ensues.
I love the voice choice you made. It's present tense. And it has that quality of weighted memory. It reminds me of Rebecca, you know, the dream of Manderley. I can't quote yours exactly, but it's something along the lines of, do you know why I'm reaching out? And that voice puts us immediately, we're catching up to a story. You know, it's from just those few words, we know that there's a relation. We don't even have a name yet, but we understand that there is a relationship and a history between the narrator and the audience. And it just, I love that, particularly that choice for a short story, because you didn't waste any time. It's just like, okay, here's the car, kick open the door, get in, let's go.
You know, that's the one thing I remember of short stories, is start the story, first paragraph, first sentence.
Yeah.
I find them excruciatingly hard to write.
I agree.
So I appreciate, yep. And I'll just go ahead and pretend that I intended all those things that you just said.
Well, come on, we come from the same writer's workshop. I know you're trained.
So Steve, I'm trying to remember, have you written short stories before this? I'm really only familiar with your novels.
Once in a while, basically somebody has to ask me and then I'll do it. And so I've probably done a dozen of them maybe over the years. It's always somebody saying, hey, will you do it for this? Or, you know, somebody asked me to do it for Ellery Queen or for an anthology, then I'll go ahead and do it.
So do you find them,
yes,
difficult,
of course,
compared to writing a novel?
Of course I do. I mean, it's you have to, novel is this big, rangy sort of affair where you can take your time and really develop things in any sort of pace you want. And a short story is like, you have to, there's no wasted movement, no wasted space. You have to execute it in just this really tight arena, and it's just a whole different discipline, I think. And I have so much respect for people who can do it very well.
I've always been astonished by Jeffrey Deaver, who, you know, is an incredible novelist and writes these amazing, well-plotted, yeah. Well, in the MWA handbook that we're going to be talking about with Lee Child and Laurie King after this program, Jeffrey has an article like this compared to one sentence from Marilyn Stasio, which he talks about outlining and all. And yet he is also a genius at short stories. And, you know, I always want to see inside his brain, you know, which side is running it and how does he do that? Fabulous. So Michael, you have a story in here, and I would like to say that I think the last line of your story is actually could have been the first one, when you say, nothing brought strangers together faster than a good murder story. I mean, that's a great line.
Thank you.
Why did you end on it?
It felt like
instead of beginning.
I'm going to echo what Laurie and Steve said, short stories do feel much more difficult. And there were only a few writers in here who I really knew from short stories. So I knew I was making the ask of a lot of novelists. I'm similar to Steve. I've probably written, I don't know, 10, but it's always been on an ask and from someone I know, and I say, sure. And then the moment rolls around where I need to produce, and I'm like, why did I say I would do this? Because it seems just incredibly daunting. So that one, I got to mine a little bit from real life experience in this one in a fun way. And I remember talking to a writer named James Alexander Tom, who, you know, writes these fantastic historical novels, incredibly well-researched stories, sort of the Revolution era. And he's a local guy near me in Bloomington, Indiana. And he was talking about how for a writer, no experience is wasted. Everything is grist for the mill, you know, a good experience, a bad experience. So Laurie and I sort of ended up in similar terrain here, where I think we were both inspired by the act moving into a different place and the way you begin to think about a house and neighbors and history. Mine has less history there, more contemporary. But as for the last line, getting back to that, how I came up with it, I have no idea other than it felt like it was the one theme, the thread that I needed to deliver as an editor, because I'm asking all of these people to come in and, you know, talk about strangers and murder. So I wanted one sentence that felt like it held the book together, and that was my best effort at it.
And that's it. Well, I think you're absolutely right. If you run a like a mystery discussion club or something, you learn in a hurry that it's amazing how it brings people together. Although in theory, it wouldn't work so well if it were actual as opposed to fictional, but I haven't tried
it. I don't know though. We love, you know, you hear a siren next door and you, suddenly you're out there talking to someone you've never been in the conversation with before. I mean, it really is interesting. I remember that from being a newspaper reporter in particular and a little bit of PI work, but everyone is willing to talk to you when it is about something salacious or tragic. I mean, in the newspaper business, there's the it bleeds, it leads slogan for front page above the fold. You know, the bloodier the story, the better the play. But I think that's just true of human nature. I mean, people are drawn to talking about shocking things. And I think there's an element of if we talk about it, we're holding it at arm's length. If we tell stories, we're sort of like pushing it away.
Yeah, there's, you know, I remember talking to, I think it was P.D. James years and years ago, because we did our first virtual event in 1995. Amazing. I just can hardly believe it. But I think I remember she said something about for a reader, you know, there's, it's so satisfying to be tucked up in your bed and knowing that the footstep on the stair is not actually coming for you. You know, it's a vicarious thrill. And, you know, you can read this stuff and you can congratulate yourself that it's not actually happening to you, but you get to participate, or at least watch it. One of the things I really liked in your introduction, and I think is an important part of doing an anthology like this, is that you mentioned that there are names not very familiar. I mean, you three are stars here, and you know, people know your work, and you've all won lots of awards and all that good stuff. But there are people whose names in this anthology, contributors, are unfamiliar to me, and I think that's a really great thing, you know, to bring in. How did you get to these stories, Michael? Is there like a submission committee? I mean, you didn't, so these stories vetted and then presented to you?
One of the great things MWA does with this is there's the committee that, you know, judges and presents me with their recommendations for finalists. And they were all, they're all great, but it was exciting for me to see new writers. That's one of the joys of an anthology is you're going to go through here and come across names you don't know, but you're going to go out and hunt down their work. Or, you know, when they have a new book out, suddenly it puts that flag up. And I think we, you know, we generally buy off word of mouth or sampling someone's work. And this is a good way to meet some new people.
So basically your message was to readers who pick this up, don't cherry pick out just the authors whose names you know or the famous authors, but, you know, read the names you don't know and the stories you don't know. So there's a discovery aspect. So Steve, did you have a chance to read? I don't mean this to be an embarrassing question, but did you have a chance to read any of the other stories?
Yeah, I did. I probably read about half of them. I read Michael's, I read Brian Quirk. Quartermoses, I read Crosby's, I wrote, I'm working my way through it because I really just got it.
Sean, sure. S.A. Cosby's story I thought was so great.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the lead story and I liked it too. And of course, he's just won the Los Angeles Times Book Prize. So, you know, pretty awesome. We did a wonderful event with him last last year that Blacktop Wasteland published. It's Patrick's kind of book. You all know Patrick. So, naturally Patrick had an event with him and we've already scheduled a new one. But Steve, was there anyone in here, you know, whose story, I mean, who you didn't know whose story particularly got to you?
Well, it's funny that you say it because that's the way that you read an anthology is that you do start with the ones that you know. And in Brian's case, I'm probably be the only person who knows him because he's a Michigan guy. And I see him when I go back there. So I'm still working my way through it. And I'm looking forward to, now that I've read the couple that I know, I'm going to look forward to reading the other people that I don't know yet.
How about you, Laurie?
Yes, I made sure to read these two fellow stories before this evening and read those that of the people that I know and working my way through it. this week, in fact. I just finished another book over the weekend, and I forget how much I enjoy reading short stories. I think because I find them so difficult to write, I tend to shy away from them, but I'm enjoying it. It's a nice, you need a nice 10, 15 minute break from work. That's a nice, go sit outside in the sun. And so, yes, I'm enjoying the book a lot.
I'm really looking forward to reading the names I don't know. And I agree with Steve, you do tend to start with the names that you're familiar with, and then you think, okay, you know, we'll move on. You know, who really ought to be leading this discussion is Patrick. Patrick, come back, because Patrick has actually edited two fabulous anthologies, one called Phoenix Noir for Akashic, and then another one for Mulholland, I think it was. And you've had some amazing authors and stories in it. So why don't I black me out for a little bit and you talk about how you go about, Patrick, being an editor and what you like in short stories.
There she goes. Hey, guys.
you get the baton. How are you, sir?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I love anthologies. And Michael, did you find that when you were putting it together, it's almost equivalent. I was talking to Denise Hamilton a couple of weeks ago about this great new one that she's put together called Speculative Los Angeles. And we were talking about how when you're gathering stories, that it's akin to doing, you remember putting together a mixtape?
Yes.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Hit the different moods. You've got your
totally. Your
opening and closing track. The
Absolutely.
Third track needs to be really good.
That's right. Yeah, and you are really crafting a journey to take the reader on. So it does become, you know, all right, so what's going to be the lead off and where are we going for a while? And, you know, did you find that to be fun and challenging when you were assembling the book, Mike?
Yeah, although I've got to give a lot of credit to Peter Joseph, who is the editor at Hanover. I mean, the lineup, I feel like he gave me a lot of help on, certainly. But I feel like we come in and go out in a tone that is what the book is supposed to be, which they're wildly different stories. And I really like Joe Hill's, so he's like our closer, and it's called Last Fair, which just seemed appropriate. But it showed, to me, it's showing a little bit of the depth of the genre. You know, it's a mystery, but it's also pushing into the supernatural. And it just, when we think about MWA, and I should mention, I'm remiss to not have already said, the bulk of the money from this goes to fund scholarships and provide opportunities for new writers and some of those, you know, the new voices we're all excited to discover. So there's a lot of good work coming from this too. Which it's a great thing that they do. But I love the tone of Last Fair because it just seemed to me, it reminds people of the broader umbrella of suspense. I feel like a lot of us who are fans of this genre can become a little too tunnel vision. You know, we like cozies or we hate cozies. We like noir. We only do contemporary stuff, whatever it is. Only right. PI fiction or no PI fiction.
Sure.
And one of the things I'm really proud of with this and very pleased is that we had such a wide range. Yeah. And I always think it's kind of funny that MWA, like they give out the Edgar Award every year. And for a long, long time, anything in the supernatural or horror genre has not been well represented in the Edgar Awards. And I'm thinking it's Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, you're giving out a bust of this guy. How do we forget that he also dabbled in, you know, that genre? So
yeah, really.
I really liked having Joe come in and swing the big stick there at the end.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My wife's a big Poe fanatic, and rereading those stories. I don't know how Laurie and Steve, how you guys feel about it, or if you've taken the time to go back and revisit some of those pieces. But he just seems wildly ahead of his time when you go back and reread him. You know, a lot of the stuff seems very contemporary.
He's doing the spectrum of the genre. I mean, you pick a set piece, a mood. I mean, he's covering it all at some point there.
Right. And so actually both Laurie and Steve, you both won the Edgar, right? Respectively. Yeah.
Yes.
That's pretty
yes.
cool.
Very awesome. A good one, actually.
Do you want me to, you want me to go get them? I've got a couple busts here. I can show them.
Well, we have some, well, kind of piggybacking on what you were saying, Michael, did you find that, and by the way, we have, I know at least one of your contributors who's tuned in here, and Tina, please forgive me if I butcher your name, Tina Tersini de Bellegarde, is that close? She's tuning in, and she says, very honored to have been a part of this wonderful anthology. It was remarkable to see how differently each author handled the theme. That must have been fun, you know, because it does seem like a real broad umbrella.
Tina has a hell of a story too. She's the penultimate act, so you'll enjoy hers.
That's great. Let's see. I do have some questions here. Okay. Yeah, Serena is making the point about how it's good to it's fun to watch these interviews. Let's see, not only do I get an inside look at authors and series I love, but I discover new books and new authors to read. And Barbara was talking about that. That's a really fun thing about anthologies. You know, you get a little taste of new authors to check out. Let's see here, what else we got? Erin Mitchell, a friend of ours. She says, a number of the stories in this anthology concern homes or neighborhoods. Do you think a town, in quotes, became smaller in these stories because of the short story form? Which is kind of an interesting question.
It's a great question. The work would suggest that. I also think when we consider the stranger, it's, you know, the idea of a threat to the home, to the more intimate existence is probably pretty common. I have to say I was expecting more people to write from the point of view of the stranger than what we had.
Were there any Camus kind of riffs anywhere?
I can't say no. I'm gonna say no. I don't think we have great example.
Yeah. Let's see here. What else do we have? Pat asked the question of all of you. She says, do you use, or did you use the short story as an opportunity to explore different characters and situations, you know, outside of your normal wheelhouse?
Yeah, that's what I did. Certainly that's, short stories are actually great for doing something that you wouldn't do
exactly in
a novel form. I don't know that I would write a novel from the standpoint, from the viewpoint of a, you know, not just a female character, because that's because you can do that, but just someone who is a nurse, someone who comes just from her background. There are certain voices that you can try out in a short story just to see if you can pull it off, that you might be nervous about trying and, you know, about committing yourself for a whole year to try to write a novel from that viewpoint.
How about you, Laurie?
I'm sitting here kind of thinking back over the short stories I've written, and early in my career, every time I wrote a short story, it evolved into a novel. My first three books, in some form or another, were sort of born out of a short story. Because the short story is so contained, and there's just so much that I would find. For example, I wrote a story set in Detroit, and I found myself so immersed and in love with the city that I ended up writing a book set in Detroit. This book, however, or this short story, and I happened to write three recently, which is kind of unusual. I don't write a lot of short stories. But they were all very much not necessarily characters that I would visit again for a novel. I guess I told their story. I told the greatest moment of their life, the most significant significant decision that they would have to make. And that's pretty much all I have to say about them once I tackle that. So, yeah.
That's interesting. You got novels out of short stories. It's almost like you auditioned the idea.
Right.
And then it read for the part, passed, and you let them let them run with it. I was trying to think if I've ever had that happen. I don't think so.
That's a very good way to say it. I audition them, and if they're interesting enough, they stick around.
Yeah.
There've been
Well, I've got you guys here because you two are two of my favorite writers and people. If you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about what you're working on now, now that you're done with your burden and commitment to me.
Steve?
Well, I just had this book out recently with Jan Ivanovich, which is something I never thought I would do a book like that, where last year was just so strange for everybody, and it was just such a dark time that it just felt like, do I want to write another hard-boiled novel of violence and death, or do I want to just write something that's take a chance to do something really, really fun, and fun for me to write it, fun for people to read it, funny and fast, and which is what Janet does. And so I just tried it, and that's The Bounty, and it came out a couple of months ago, and no regrets. I mean, it was just the right thing at the right time. But now,
was it for you writing collaboratively though, Steve? Because you haven't done that before.
I've never done that. I never have, and I never thought I would. But like I said, it was such a unique time for everybody. It was just why not try it?
But I have a question for you. That's why I popped back in. I was thinking about The Lock Artist. And, you know, you've written, a whole set of books about one particular guy. And then suddenly it was like, The Lock Artist, how did he become a whole novel as opposed to something smaller? Was there just so much to say about him? I mean, you won another Edgar for The Lock Artist. So, you have multiple statues back there.
I had done, I guess, 7 McKnight books at that point. And I actually did do a standalone called Night Work for number 8. And so any normal human being would have gone back to the series, but I just had this idea in my head about this kid who had this thing about locks and safes. And I'm sure the other, Michael and Lori can, sometimes an idea will come to you and it just won't let you go.
Yeah. And it doesn't fit what you've already written about.
No, it was so different. It's a young character. It's the first time I ever wrote from a criminal point of view, even though he doesn't want to be a criminal, but it was more of a coming of age story. Right. It was a crime story, honestly, it sort of turned out more like a young adult novel, even though I didn't realize I was doing that. It was just a whole departure, but it just sometimes, it's a mysterious process how sometimes this thing will just come to you. And the only way to get past it is just to write it. Otherwise,
a short story could be a mini version of that. Of course, I'm used to Michael Carita because you never have any idea what he's going to do. I mean, every book is.
I don't even know what name I'm going to show up under.
There's that too, because we'll get to see you as Scott Carson in the fall. But, I think of you as somebody who keeps getting ideas that don't fit anything else that you've written. Mm-hmm. And so off you go doing something interesting. I'm dying to see the movie in May with Angelina Jolie, because that I think that's such a great book that you wrote. I'm wondering how it's going to translate to film.
It's a lot of fun. There's some phenomenal performances and it just moves. I mean, Taylor Sheridan, who's the director and one of the writers on it, he knows that world, and he just, once it comes out of the gates, it does not stop. But I appreciate also how well he truly knows the world of the story. It's set in Montana, and Taylor, I think he lives in Wyoming, but he knows, he's grew up on a ranch. He knows the mountains. He's been in that terrain, and it feels like it has that authenticity that's really special. And Angelina Jolie is pretty special too. So she brings her own brand of special to it. I'm not going to let Lori duck my question, though. I was curious what she's working on. She's trying to hide in the shadows.
I could turn my little light down. I'm thankfully finally near the end of the next book I'm working on. It was a It's been a tough, just following on the heels of a book that was tough in subject matter. But this one, just very short, very, I don't have a nice slick pitch worked out for it yet, but it's set in the panhandle of Florida, which is where I live. I've sort of settled in the kind of the Southern Gothic sort of genre, I guess. And it's about when a serial killer comes home again, will the victims he claimed be his next or his last?
I like that. You've got me with that.
Yeah, that's the short and sweet version of a book I'm very glad to be closing in on the end of.
I was thinking about it when we were all logging on here, thinking I'm actually glad to be in a virtual event with you, Lori, because the last time we did an in-person event together, there was a little offstage activity. There was a little ruckus because actually, that's a true story. I'm delivering it as a joke, but it was the truth. And that's because you did a very brave thing as a writer and you wrote a book set in the South and dealing with the Klan and addressing some big issues. And I was fascinated after this happened. An audience member was upset, but I was fascinated when we were talking, you said that wasn't the first time it had happened. And you were running into resistance as a writer on book tour, which is something that I couldn't even really imagine. So it's a wonderful book. It was a brave choice as a writer and I recommend it.
So this what gone, are you gone so here? Long?
What?
Gone too long or gone so long? Yeah.
Gone too long.
Right.
Yeah.
So Michael, you have a book coming out under your alternate identity, Scott Carson, in what, October?
Scott Carson will ride around Halloween. I think it's the 26th.
So you've decided to take your sort of Joe Hill persona and make it official. And then you're writing Michael Corita, the sort of Michael Corita books that we read, although we never know what one we're going to get. Why did you decide to split?
I try to bludgeon the reading public from as many angles as possible. Keep them on their toes. I'd written three supernatural novels. It's more than a decade ago now. And then I went away from that for a long time. And there's a publishing challenge to that. And then also I've always loved the idea of the pseudonym. Although what I really liked was the idea of an authentic pseudonym where we wouldn't be having this conversation. So that's what I wanted to do, was to be completely under the radar and be able to hand a book to like my mother and say, hey, tell me what you think of this guy. And you would actually get a real opinion. I thought that would be really interesting. But from a publishing perspective, no one was too excited about having a writer that who could do no publicity. So Scott Carson is now just an open secret, but he's going to handle the kind of dark, warped side of the world for me.
Steve, what are you working on now that you've done a collaborative thing and a short story? Are you back to novels?
Yeah, I'm gonna finishing up another Nick Mason book. In fact, that's pretty much done. And then I'm gonna do another Alex McKnight. Time to check in back with him. And then I got something else in mind that it's kind of crazy. It's so crazy, I can't even say what it is.
Wonderful. That's exciting.
Sounds promising.
I love it. So Patrick, are there any other questions?
I'm just kind of looking. Somebody was just asking about Nick Mason and when he'll come back.
Yep, he's coming.
Let's see. No, I think we've handled just about everything. Well, one question for you, Michael. Was there any rhyme or reason to how you chose your contributors? Did you send out
let's see, who didn't turn me down? There's a rhyme and reason, was trying to come up with diverse voices. And I was also, as I said, most of the people I was reaching out to, I knew their work from novels. I'm not a short story guy in terms of that world. There were a few who were, Joe was one, there was a particular target because I love his short stories. So we wanted diverse voices, and then I wanted people who would hopefully have some fun with it, and it wouldn't look at it as just a favor for a friend or something they had to do, had to deliver. And like these two guys, Lori and I go way, way back to a writing class together. We were in a workshop with Dennis Lehane. And then Steve is actually, he is the first published author who ever called me. The first conversation I had with a published writer was Steve Hamilton. When Tonight I Said Goodbye, my debut novel, won the PWA, Private Eye Writers of America prize, Steve picked up the phone and called me. And he probably has no idea just how exciting that was and how much that meant to me, still does mean to me. So when, to get back to your question of, you know, how do I send out invitations, I think of people who I believe will deliver, and they both came through, and I really appreciate it.
So you have 19 authors, including yourself, as contributors to this. Was there a limit? I mean, you know,
I exceeded it. I did a bad job of listening to the rules. Everyone with MWA is very helpful and precise, and there was a very specific kind of approach. And then I over budgeted, or maybe I thought my rejection rate was going to be higher. I thought maybe it would be like dating. And so, you know, I'd put 50 requests out and then still not have anything to show for it. So we needed to deal with that. But we also, I feel like we were several years out in advance. You know, I was able to give everyone warning and not a firm deadline, which was good. I was thinking Dean Koontz early on said yes, and then he had to drop out for reasons. I mean, he just had to get out. But I remember he responded and he said he would do it under the condition that he was allowed to write at least 10,000 words. And I thought, well, that's going to eat up a good chunk of the book. And I don't know if that really qualifies as a short story, but it's Dean. So sure, yeah, why not? I still would have been curious to see what he did.
Patrick had to make that decision. And which one was it? Phoenix? It was Phoenix Noir, right? Where there's a novella included among their short stories. What's the name of your second anthology, Patrick? It's the one about cars, but I'm blanking out.
Oh, The Highway Kind.
The Highway Kind. So Patrick had like Michael Connelly and James Salas and amazing people. Did Lee Child write one for you there? Because he wrote one for you from Phoenix Noir.
No, I almost got Daniel Woodrell to do one, but then he bailed on me.
Oh.
I did get George Pelicanos, so that was cool.
Right. Patrick's Phoenix Noir, actually the story by Luis Alberto Urrea won the Edgar for best short story. And C.J. Box wrote one for The Highway Kind, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because it got included in. So you've really had some. But I was thinking about it because leafing through this for you, Michael. The books are generally sort of a standard size. I mean, they can be much bigger or much smaller. But the thing about short stories is they're not uniform in length. So you know, you could get a really slim short story from one person, and then you could get a pretty serious chunk. Maybe not 40,000 words like Patrick ran into, but still a chunk. And so it seems to me that it isn't so much the number of contributors as, you know, the combined length of the stories that's kind of an issue for production.
See, this is why you are an editor and a publisher, and I am a guest editor. You thought about these things and you understand them.
She's talking about Diana Gabaldon. But see, 40,000, that's like flash fiction for Diana.
Yes. So, we all just kind of laughed. But she did write a short one for The Highway Kind. She and her husband together. That was actually a short story. And then on the other hand, Patrick was dealing with James Salas, who's, you know, remember Drive, which Poison Pen Press published? And, you know, it was like, what, 35,000 words or something? And, you know, it was a novel, and I always remembered Marilyn Stasio's review for it because, you know, what did she write? She said, James Salas has written a perfect noir or perfect story or something, and that's all there is to say. And, you know, it became a great movie. It became a movie in part because it was so terse. You know, it was so short that the movie with Ryan Gosling really pretty easy. Yep. Absolutely. But I think that's one of the great things about short story collections is that you get, you know, the really short, and then you get and in fact, in the MWA handbook that we're going to be talking to Lee and Lori about here shortly, it ranges all the way from big pages by Meg Gardner and big pages by Jeffrey Deaver to one sentence by Marilyn Stasio. You know, I mean, there's a gigantic range of length involved.
Nobody tried to slip that one past me. It would have been Allifair Burke. If anyone tried the one sentence short story, it would have been Allifair, but, yeah. But she didn't. She delivered.
But I think that, you know, that makes collections fun, where you get, you know, you get so many different characters and so many points of view and stories, but you also get, you know, very brief reading experience or a slightly more immersive one. And there's no standard length, is there? You know, I mean, it's supposed to be short, but in point of fact, they can vary pretty dramatically in size, depending on what you wanna say. Anyway, if that's it, Patrick, no more questions?
Nope, not really. A lot of people are excited about the movie, Michael. And they're weighing in on that. So that's
pretty, I was going to cool. say, who wants to talk about books? There's a movie. Come on.
What's the actual screening date? May what?
May 14th.
May 14th. Well, we'll try and ask to schedule an event at the Penn so we can all stay home and watch. Is it going to be in theaters or streaming?
Both. So Warner worked out, AT&T worked out a deal where Warner's movies are in theaters, but then they also have a 31-day window on HBO Max.
Fabulous.
You have Great. Options. You can take your vaccinated butts to the theater, which I encourage you to do, or you can stay at home and enjoy it in comfort and leisure.
It's very exciting. This has really been fun. It's so great to see all three of you. I see Patrick all the time, but it's wonderful. I miss you guys. It's so weird not to actually get together.
I know it. I appreciate you having us, and I appreciate Lori and Steve giving up an evening to support the cause here too.
We do too. So thank you both, all three of you very much. And this is really a terrific book, and it's great pandemic reading, because you can just get lost in it for a short time if you choose, or you can gulp down a whole bunch of them all at once, depending on your mood. It's very elegant, very well done, and hats off to Hanover Press for the excellent job that they did with it. Anyway, thanks very much for joining us. Bye, everybody.
Take care. Thanks for watching.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.